wars, good fights, and griping about the great things on the beat. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the crash side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and talking down to you. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing and you want it. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. And they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking inside me, running down with life, I'm fighting in a fog that deep. If you don't love it, leave it. But this song I'm singing, be warned. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the crack inside me.
This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio or AltRightTV.com. I'm going to play a show I did, a video I recorded with Brian Rue a couple of days ago. It's all about the coronavirus, the Chinese connection, and how our Sinophile, or that is pathetically pro-red Chinese, deluded anti-racist establishment, failed to protect us.
It is April 2nd, 2020. I'm with Paul Fromm, the director of the Canadian Association for Free Expression. And guess what we're going to talk about? The coronavirus, of course. So welcome back to the show, Paul. It's been a few weeks since we talked.
Yes, well, I'm sure everybody has heard that it's practically on overload from all the coronavirus coverage in the mass media. Up until a couple weeks ago, 95% of CNN news was "We hate Donald Trump." Well, "We hate Donald Trump" has been reduced to perhaps 20%, and now it's coronavirus.
But now we blame Trump for coronavirus. They're trying to do that too. Not doing enough.
CBC was a little better. It wasn't quite so not wall to wall Donald Trump. But anyway. I'd like to talk about two things. One that's absolutely for sure, and the other a warning, really. And I'm not going to be handing out any protect yourself or health advice. Let me start off by saying, while I don't think Canada could have avoided coronavirus, we could have stopped it. Or diminished it a lot earlier if it weren't for the ideological craziness of people at the top, including the Prime Minister and the Chief Medical Officer of Health, this Chinese woman, Theresa Tam. When it first became known here in the West that there was something going on in Red China, which we now call the Wuhan flu or the coronavirus, the information was coming back that whatever this thing was very serious. And we began to get our first couple of cases. Where did they come from? Greenland. No, they came very predictably from communist China. People who had traveled there and who'd gotten sick. It was the same thing on that cruise ship that was parked in Yokohama for a number of weeks, and there were a lot of deaths aboard, etc. The person who brought that onto the board of the ship had been in communist China. Well, it doesn't take a genius to think, duh, well, maybe we should restrict travel from that area, or at the very least, quarantine everybody who gets off a plane from that area. No, of course, that was not done. And we were told, if anybody who pointed out the obvious, that is, well, there's a problem in China, maybe we should be careful of people coming from China. You know what? You're a racist. Of course, you know, Brian and I know, that racism is a code word for anti-white. Racism, of course, is a term dreamed up by Lev Davidovich Bronstein, a Jewish communist, otherwise known as Trotsky.
Yep.
And it was a term he used to smear his opponents in the Communist Party. They struggled in the 20s and 30s in Russia between what you might call the nationalists, those who wanted to build communism in the Soviet Union, and never mind spreading it abroad, and the internationalists, those who wanted to spread it. Well, anyway, Trotsky was an internationalist, so that was a smear word he used. But quite apart from the origins of that, the failure to stop contact with communist China has cost us dearly. That's how the virus got into Canada and got supplemented. And then more recently, there was travel from Iran. Iran got it from somebody who did regular business with China. It spread very rapidly in certain parts of Iran for other reasons I don't think you know, really have to get into. Again, we did not thoroughly restrict people coming in from Iran. So we got quite an infusion of cases, and then they began to spread. But this is I know we're in the middle of a crisis, and we may have to put some of our criticisms of the way things were handled on the side. But let us not forget why coronavirus got its foothold here. It got its foothold because of the ideological beliefs of the people at the top, primarily the trust fund kid, Justin Trudeau, and Theresa Tan. They were actually, in fact, up until relatively recently, like perhaps up until maybe the last week or 10 days, almost every time the Prime Minister would speak, or Theresa Tan would speak, there'd be the waving of the finger about not targeting certain communities and don't be racist. Well, I don't like that term, racist. I like prefer race realist. Race is a factor. It's not the only factor in life, but it is a factor. And an intelligent person takes it into account where relevant. Well, it was very relevant for people, for protecting ourselves, in terms of people coming from the hot zone of coronavirus. We failed to do that because of the idiot ideology at the top. And in my Canadian Immigration Hotline, we've had a section called Health Watch, which looks at health and immigration issues. And we have warned this for 30 years. Immigration, or poorly screened immigration, can kill you. Well, we're seeing that. Or poorly, in this case, probably poorly screened access to our country. And we were told, no, we shouldn't close the borders because coronavirus knows no boundaries, knows no race, knows no religion. It can affect everybody. Yeah, it's true, it can affect everybody. But it's coming from a certain place where it was, you know, 6 weeks ago. We didn't take the necessary steps to stop people coming in from that place. Well, lo and behold, now about 10 days ago, Trudeau finally got the message and said, anybody coming back from abroad, particularly the over a million Canadians who went abroad, but mostly to the south and the Caribbean or Mexico for the March, for the school March break. Everybody coming back, regardless, has to quarantine themselves for 14 days, right across the board. Now, isn't that generalizing? Of course. Is it overkill? I don't know. But it's interesting that when we could have stopped a relatively small number of people, you know, the planes coming from China, and there were, you know, that we're talking in terms of thousands, but a few thousands of people, they wouldn't do that. Now they've changed their tune, or reluctantly being forced to change their tune. So a lot of blame will go in the end, I think, on the federal government doing things motivated by this crackpot anti-white ideology. Okay, that's kind of point number one, and I totally agree with that. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, it is the Wuhan flu. Leo, let's be quite clear about that. You know, it's where it comes from, because you, in these times, you really can't protect yourself if you don't know what the reality is. And I think this is something we're all struggling with. Brian, I bounce around from almost from day to day as to just what is happening with this Wuhan flu or the...
Yeah, me too. It's confusing.
You know, some people on the internet say it's completely a hoax. Some people, of course, say it's pretty much as we are being told. We get reports of citizens, journalists like yourself, going to hospitals, even in New York, and saying there's nothing happening here.
That's what I want to do here at Vancouver General Hospital next few days. I'm planning to do that, actually.
You're very good. I mean, we need truth tellers and truth seekers. And I think that's what unites you and me and your circle of friends and my circle of friends. We're truth seekers. I don't think any of us says we know it all. And I don't say that everything we're told by the fake news media is false. Of course not. What we have to do, though, is sort out the truth from the lies and then come to a conclusion. So on the one hand, you've got people say it's really just a hoax. Others say, well, it is a flu, no doubt about it. It's a bad one. But flu kills probably 10,000 people, I believe, in the United States every year. Flu is a bad thing, particularly for people who are already have compromised immune systems or are elderly. And flu does kill lots of people. I have seen some arguments that this is just a bad flu, that the death rate for the standard flu is about 1.3. That's 1.3%. So, you know, one in a third people for every 100 we get that will die. I've heard that properly calculated, the death rate for this flu is about 1.6%. Bad, yes.
So what, you know? Yeah, no big deal.
No, see, the problem is, I'm a former instructor, but actually in English. So if my math explanation is a little lame, so be it. In working out a percentage, you have what's called the numerator and the denominator. So you know you have a line, and the denominator in this case would be the number of cases, let's say in a given area. Okay, so let's say 100, and the numerator would be the number of deaths. So that goes on the top. Let's say it's 2. So in that case, it would be 2%. The problem though is the denominator, especially in Canada and to some extent the United States, we haven't done a lot of testing. So we don't know how many coronavirus cases are out there.
And it seems they can't really test. Like, people have coronaviruses, but the vast majority of humanity has some coronavirus is, it's normal, but this Corona-19, they say, I don't think they even know how to test just for that, and does it even exist? It's a doubt.
Well, yeah, let's assume they do know. The fact is, we have done relatively little testing, and here in Ontario, and I suspect it's the same in British Columbia, you're told, unless you are getting very sick, don't even call us or don't even present yourself for a test. Lots of people have coughs. I have a little bit of a dry cough from time to time. I've had it on and off for many weeks. I think it's largely the environment inside. But it does not become worse. I don't have short shortness of breath or some of the others are high or fever of any sort. There are many cold symptoms that manifest themselves, and they're not coronavirus. So the strategy here, unlike in Taiwan, where they really have gotten a hold of this and brought it under control, they test. We don't. We only test if it looks that we've got symptoms fairly severe. Well, that means we're undoubtedly underestimating the number of cases. But that is because most people who will get the coronavirus will overcome it with only a few mild symptoms. So the point being, we don't know the death rate. I'm very intrigued by countries that have taken other approaches. Taiwan, for instance, they're Chinese. Taiwan learned about it, the coronavirus, from their, I'm not going to say spies, but perhaps their intelligence agencies or medical reports early. They took it very seriously in January. They said that what we're hearing back from the Hubei province is really bad. This virus, they're shutting the place down. A lot of people are dying. We've got to take this seriously. So what they did, instead of shutting down the economy and shutting down the island, what they do is they rigorously test people. I've seen video on TV. The restaurants and bars are open. Schools are open. The kids are going to school. What they're doing with the kids is spacing them out. So in a classroom, which might normally have, let's say, 40 little desks, they move them apart or maybe even break the class up into two. So they space the kids out, but they don't shut school down. You can go to a restaurant or bar, and when you come to the door, they put one of these devices up to your face to see if you've got a fever. If you don't have a fever, come on in and enjoy yourself. If you do, well, you get sent away for a test. And then if you do have the coronavirus, you're isolated for 14 days. So they managed to do this without shutting the whole country, virtually shutting the whole country down. So the second part of what I'd like to say to Ryan is that we have to use what our viewers can see right now of our bodies. I can see your head, biggest light centered beautifully in the middle of the screen. You can see me. We should be using what God gave us up here, the think. And I don't mean to say that we should criticize or oppose every one of the things, restrictions that are coming down fast and furious. But we have to think about this and question. And I'll tell you why. Even if the coronavirus is exactly as we are being told, it will be used, and I've seen it used already, as a way to take away our rights. There are evil people or power mad people in every society who will use this as an excuse. There was a massive stripping of people's rights after 9/11. And again, no matter, regardless of what you think happened on 9/11, something happened, and there was this huge reaction. I don't want to go into that right now because that's almost another story, but. We went from the relative ease of getting on an airplane. There's a small screening for metal detector. To right now, you practically have to take off all your clothes to get on. And and any time you ask security, that's the buzzword. Authorities just say security for your protection. and believe it'll go our rights. Well, I see the same thing happening here. Businesses will use this as an excuse to reduce service. I've already seen a number of examples from my limited experience. Flying on Air Canada. The last time I flew, a couple weeks ago, I was, as the passengers approached the plane, we were given a bottle of water. Oh, great, bottle of water. And then we were told, there'll be no service. Now, you know, Air Canada, cheap as it is, we haven't had meals in economy class for at least a decade, but they bring around a tea, coffee, or soft drinks, or whatever. Well, there'd be no reason for that. I mean, no service. I asked why. Coronavirus. Bullshit. The stewardess is there. They walk up and down the aisle. They, the end of the flight, collect any garbage you might have, and including your empty water bottles. Where would be the danger? Most of them are wearing masks anyway. So they'd come down the aisle under the traditional model, and they would ask you, what would you like? Okay, tea or coffee? So they pour your tea or coffee, give you the sugar or cream if that's what you want, and you take it. You're not touching them. They're not touching you. And near the end of the flight, they come around and they collect your garbage, including the empty Coca-Cola tins or the empty tea or coffee cups. Again, you're not touching them. They're not touching you. But a lot of people just say, coronavirus. As a frequent flyer, I've got the privilege of going to the Maple Leaf Lounge at major airports. So when I was in Calgary, there a few weeks ago, I went to the Maple Leaf Lounge. Sign, Maple Leaf Lounge closed. Why? Coronavirus. This is also bullshit. The Maple Leaf Lounge would take a number of travelers out of the main part of the lobby, because where were people? Because most of the restaurants were closed. Well, they're all gathering around the gate from which their flight will eventually take off. So if you could take a number of those people and put them in this Maple Leaf Lounge, you're taking, reducing the crowding, which we're told is a bad thing. Crowding is not a good thing. We should keep our distance. And in addition, we'll be keeping the jobs for a few of the people who run the Maple Leaf Lounge. And of course, they can still have the rule that you keep a distance of 6 feet from other people. I see us in all sorts of ways simply being businesses achieving this. The funniest, it's you wonder what is it funny or pathetic, but some Tim Hortons outlets are very, very well managed. But I know one in the Okanagan that it's got to be the most badly run in the country, at least that I know of. And it was, it was bad long before the coronavirus. But anyway, when I was out there, the rule had come down that they won't be serving in the restaurant. So the restaurant aspect of being able to sit down and talk to your friends or read a paper, now that's gone. So if you want your coffee and donuts, you go to the drive-thru. So okay, I drive through. I order my standard coffee and a honey dip. The very foreign voice who replying to me, probably a temporary foreign worker, tells me, no honey dips. Well, I don't put up with that. I said, fake some. Fake some more. Come on, genius. It is still 7 hours to closing.
The donut shop.
you run out of your best-selling product, bake some more. Oh, coronavirus. Well, I said, bullshit.
What does that have to do with it? They're open.
It's cool, this story's almost comical, but it will be used. And, I think we have a duty to push back and say, no, that doesn't wash. And I think a lot of businesses are making things up as they go along. Last week, I went to one of the banks I deal with, and fair enough, you go in and they've got these X's on the floor with, I guess, a masking tape or something.
Yeah, tape standing 6 feet apart.
Yeah, so okay.
You see that everywhere.
For the benefit of the dummies, I guess, all right. We kind of line up our feet with one of the X's and stay 6 feet away from me. So that was okay, I get that. Well, beginning this Monday, only a very limited number of people. I never did find out exactly how many, maybe 2 or 3 or 5, are allowed into this branch. It's a big branch. Meanwhile, so I saw these people lined up. I said, "Well, I'll line up to get into the bank." Glum faces, kind of nodded, yeah. So I went to the end of the line. Took me probably 20 minutes to get into the bank. And the bank is located right along the Queen Elizabeth Way, which is a major highway in southern Ontario. And it was a windy day. So add to that the wind of the traffic going by and the wind. It was cold. And most of the people in line weren't very well dressed, myself included. I mean, I didn't count on being in a line outside the bank. And I commented to the security guard, that didn't do any good. I mean, the guy, he's just hired. I said, you know, I probably have a bigger chance of catching a cold out here than I do of catching coronavirus inside. Because, I mean, people are already following, the precaution of being 6 feet away from others. And, so, frankly, I thought the lining up made no sense. But we will see ourselves increasingly regimented. One of the things I know many of your previous guests have talked about is the fear of a cashless society. And I see pressure for that right now.
Yeah, good excuse now.
At a major supermarket that I've dealt with, Sobeys, at many Tim Hortons, and at the Electric Control Board of Ontario, this is, I am sure, just a fraction of a much, much larger list, but these are places I've had some dealings with. There are signs saying we prefer credit cards or debit cards, not cash. Now, I think there was enough pressure brought on the Liquor Control Board that they were told you can't refuse cash. I mean, it's legal currency in Canada. But there really will be that tendency. Now, I know the excuse will be, well, no banknotes are dirty. And they are, and there's nothing new about that they are.
The coronavirus on the banknotes, that's the excuse.
Yeah, that's the excuse, coronavirus. Well, okay, I agree, it's a concern. The simple thing, though, is, and almost all employees who handle money are doing this, is they've got gloves. I agree that that's one of the sensible things that you're told to do, but it would have been sensible even without the coronavirus, is wash your hands frequently. In fact, that's probably, in addition to good nutrition, one of the best ways to stay healthy. Wash your hands. Anyway, my theory is that when this is over, a lot of these places will simply stop accepting cash. And the danger of that is incalculable. And I'm only kicking off a couple of businesses that I've dealt with, but Sobeys, which is a big supermarket chain, has a sign that they strongly urge you to use a credit card or debit. Same with the Liquor Control Board of Ontario, and same with Tim Hortons, but they prefer not to have cash. I think they put it a bit stronger than that. But the excuse will be the cash is dirty, and true, banknotes are dirty. This has nothing to do with coronavirus. They are. And that's why you're normally urged, if you've been handling cash, to wash your hands before you put your hands on your nose or in your mouth or anyway. And probably one of the best advices for good health, other than proper nutrition, is to wash your hands. And that also has nothing to do with the coronavirus. So okay, cash is dirty. It always has been, or potentially is dirty. But most employees are already wearing gloves, And if you handle cash with your bare hands, as it says the customer, you of course should wash your hands before you put them in your mouth. My fear is, though, that there is a push toward the cashless society. And that makes you incredibly vulnerable, because if there is no cash, all you have that gives you access to whatever funds you have, whether it's a credit card or a debit card, is that card. If that card is canceled, you are lower than a nobody. Even as a poor person, you can take your empty Tim Hortons coffee cup and beg, and people can put cash in. But in a cashless society, they don't have any cash to help you.
Gosh.
Yeah. And I had a taste of that a couple of years ago. I was overseas, and I began to realize that one of my credit cards was not working. At first I put it down to the fact that some establishments did not ask for the PIN. I thought, okay, well, maybe the central Visa brain doesn't sees an invalid transaction. Anyway, I'll skip a few stages, but and finally I called Visa, and I was told very breezily, oh, you canceled your credit card, Mr. Brock. I said, I did not. When was this? Well, the person gave me a date, maybe a little week, or perhaps a week prior to this. I had been in negotiations with the bank for a line of credit. And I'll make a long story somewhat short. A bank employee had arbitrarily canceled my credit card. Now, I took this up with the bank. I took this up with various other people in the financial industry. Nobody understands how it can be done. Because you know the way it is. You call up and, okay, well, what's your name? What's your account number? What's your date of birth? What's the size of your hat? Or, you're asked 50 million questions to identify you. Okay, yeah. How did my visa get canceled?
Was it because you're Paul Fromm and you're on Wikipedia and you have an infamous reputation because he didn't like you and your political views?
I don't know. Yeah, but actually, I managed to get it solved. I got my credit card back. But it emphasized to me how vulnerable we are. And of course, I did have other means. I had a way of getting some cash and so on. But in a cashless society, if that card is canceled, you're destitute.
Yeah, that scares me. Like, PayPal cut me off before, I've been cut off other things, so that's pretty scary. They just turn off your credit card.
Yeah, no
cash.
You're gone. I had the same experience, Brian, but about 2 years ago, a sunny April morning, I got up, went to my computer, and a note from PayPal, your account is being canceled for violations of, community standards or something. Nothing specific.
Community standards could be anything.
And this is the Canadian Association for Free Expression. People would give us contributions for the free speech cause. Your mind boggles. Well, what does that mean? You mean community standards oppose free speech? But it's all arbitrary. You know, somebody pressed the button and you're gone. I think we really have to watch for police state, we're moving in that direction. I talked about some of the ridiculous rules or police enforcement in England. I was just before this broadcast listening to the mayor of Toronto, who's on the TV or radio several times a day, with more and more rules. And now, because people go to the public parks and have been playing basketball or soccer, and they've not stopped. Well, they took away the basketball hoops, I think. And then
they're taking away the basketball hoops. That's just totalitarian. That's no fun.
Yeah, and and so now they put big concrete blocks to block your way into the parking lot. And they're the huge fines that you're caught playing, gabbing there. They were hiring 200 more enforcement officers. They're going crazy.
But if people are 6 feet apart, what's the problem of being out in public then?
I don't know. Maybe it's the games. I haven't quite learned whether you're still allowed to go to the park to walk around if you're 6 feet from anybody else. But this all intrusive police state. Now, I know people will say, well, it's necessary for the short term. What I would like to hear anytime I hear regulations like this coming down is that these are in place for the next 30 days, that they have a sunset clause. And we know what Trudeau tried to pull last week in Ottawa. They were asking for emergency powers to allow this minority government to have the unlimited power to tax, to spend, to borrow, and so on. Well, this didn't show much, didn't reflect much credit on anybody. All four parties were allowed to send a couple of members to Ottawa so that you wouldn't have 338. I think there were about 20. So the Liberals would send so many, the Conservatives, the NDP, the Bloc, and the Green. It took a backbencher, a fellow named Reed from the Ottawa Valley. He actually read the legislation when it came through the night before. He said, they want this power till the end of 2021. It looks as though...
Holy smokes, was that in the fine print?
Oh, yeah.
Holy smokes, a year and a half, 2 years.
They snuck it in at the last minute.
Wow.
At that point, I think nobody expects this to last more than 3 months. I can understand extraordinary powers for, let's say, 90 days. For 18 months in a minority government?
It's for a cold? For a flu? It's totalitarian. Ooh, scary. It's a cover.
And that's what convinces me, that regardless of what this coronavirus is, bad people will use it as a power grab and as a way to limit your rights. And so, to the people that are listening, first of all, keep that in mind. Not everybody means well, and not everybody who says, I'm trying to keep people safe from coronavirus, gives a flying flip about your safety.
Yeah, I call it compassion is aggression. They use compassion as an excuse to carry out an aggression against the people.
And I urge people to challenge. If there's some new rule, ask. Ask the manager. But most of the time, you're going to get, they don't know. I mean, it'll be almost as lean as the girl at the Tim Hortons who told me the reason they didn't have any more how you get donuts was coronavirus. But, you know, Canadians have a tendency, unfortunately, to trust the people in power. I'm not saying that everything they do is wrong, but
it's a dangerous tendency.
And the same with businesses. Yeah, you know, business will try to cheap you out all too often. Not everybody, of course, but there is that tendency, and fob it off on you. We're saving you from coronavirus. You know, it's an old saying, but the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. If we don't watch and challenge, I don't want to live in a police state. I don't want to live in a nanny state. And I would feel a lot happier when new rules are coming down and you can't do this and you can't do that, than we're told for the next, let's say, 30 days. Because I can see some of these restrictions. That becomes the new normal.
That's terrible, yeah. I like what you said earlier about the economy. I was watching President Putin just this morning. He said, we can't shut down the economy in Russia. The economy is foundational to the survival of the Russian people, so I'm not going to shut it down. So I think he's look at the mistakes of what other countries are doing, like Canada.
Well, you know, and that's right. And I seldom have a good thing to say about Sweden, but Sweden has taken a completely different approach than almost all the other European countries to the coronavirus. They've not shut the economy down. They have urged people where they can to work from home, but that makes sense. They've not shut the schools down. Kids still go to school. They do have coronavirus. There have been some deaths. But there's a model where it's not out of control. It's not spreading like wildfire. Yes, it's there and it is a problem, but they haven't shut the economy down. I think it's well worth asking, what is this the best approach that we're taking? Because right now, a lot of people are hurting, and we're only 2 weeks into it. 1 million Canadians claimed unemployment insurance last week. You know, there are only 38 million Canadians.
Yeah.
And when you say take out people who are retired, children, people who are too young to work, people are already staying at home, maybe stay-at-home moms or whatever. I'm not sure how big our overall workforce is and address is. Perhaps it's 20 million at that. 1 million in 1 week. And this week will be worse.
That's a lot of people, and it's a strain on everyone else.
And people are hurting. Most people live pretty much paycheck to paycheck. Well, no paycheck kind of is coming in next week. A lot of people were having problems yesterday. Yesterday was April 1st, and for many people that was rent day or mortgage day. If you just lost your job, you may not have had enough money to make the rent. That's only the beginning of the problems. You have enough money for food. You have enough money for car repairs or what other little emergency might pop up.
And I think what President Trump said, he said, we can't let the cure be worse than the disease. He said, he wants America working again by Easter, by April 12th, you know?
Yeah, he's absolutely right. Now, that he may have dialed that back to the end of April, but people are vulnerable, and that's a big concern. We saved some people from coronavirus, but we destroy the economy or destroy it for a year. What I urge people though to do is not to panic, and not panicking, think, and question, because a lot of people will I think try to take advantage or will bring in silly rules. They may not even be doing this to because they want to take advantage of you, but they just it sounds good. We'll limit the number of people in the store. Why? If people stay 6 feet apart. I think we have to protect our rights, because I don't think we can count on the government, which is filled with power-hungry, power-mad control freaks. I don't think we can count on them to protect our rights.
Yeah, and also, coronavirus is supposed to be more serious for elderly people, you know, in the 70s or older. Well, it's not going to help elderly people if the entire country's economy collapses. We don't have the money to care for the elderly anyway, or if there's starvation. So it doesn't seem like a very logically thought out process here.
No, it's not. And of course, economically, we were in bad shape before the coronavirus hit. I mean, it sounds like a story from ancient history, but you know, it's only about a month ago that we were talking about the catastrophe of these Native Indian and environmental crazy blockades, and the government was doing very little about them, and the damage that had already caused the economy of Western Canada, and so on. I mean, that was a big issue. That's now down the memory hole.
It's but, nothing compared to this, yeah.
You know, well, but the damage that had been done by that to the economy was great, and the several big development projects, the project by Teck in Northern Alberta, Canada, well, they said, we can't put up with this bullshit anymore. I mean, the, regulation and reviews, court cases. Okay, we're not going to build. And it's still not sure whether that pipeline that had already been approved, the one that the renegade Wet'suwet'en hereditary chief are fighting, whether that will actually get built.
Yeah, even though all the Indian bands involved say it's fine, you know, the 90% approval here for the people.
Yeah. And they're going to get to make money out of it, and well, they should. My point is the economy was already on shaky grounds. Well, now we're into this crisis.
Yeah, I wonder what things will be like a month from now or 6 months from now. We just don't know at this point.
Well, if we still have electrical power and the internet, we'll come back to this, Brian.
Yes, we should do that. Thanks for being on the show, Paul. Thanks for the update. Appreciate it.
This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to take my musical break right now. and I'm going to play some bluegrass music, which was sent to me by two other members of the Council of Conservative Citizens, Mark and Tina Palazzolo from St. Louis, Missouri. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
I'm all meal on, world meal, I say. I ain't got time to teach you now, the mules done run away. Al Johnson had an old gray mule, his name was Simon Slick. Back his ears and lift his tail, how that mule would kick. Competition now, new and run away. I just heard a story about a boy and a gal been back up in the mountains. This is back in the day when they used to cord on mules, don't you know? This old fella's mules done got loose in the hitch rack. He's a trying to get his mule and his gal friend together for all he's worth and can't do nothing with it. That fella sure got some troubles. I'm on you, well, I tie out the old new sail just to hear him better. Well, if I had a needle and thread fine as I could sew, I'd sew my sweetheart to my back and down the road I'd go. Oh, oh, me, I'll say, ain't got time to kiss you now, the mule and run away. Come on, mule, oh, Miss Liza, keep cool. Keep your seat, everyone, I'm messing with my mule. Come on, mule, oh, mule, I say. Ain't got time, kiss you now, the mule done run away. Come on, mule, oh, mule, I say. Ain't got time, kiss you now, the mule done run away.
Thank you. said chicken bun, then they got him around his neck and picked him clean. Funniest chicken I ever seen. Hey,
Baffinet, oh, Baffinet, hey, Baffinet, you're the one for me.
Three cracks and just one dot, and never says who you think I am. Bad hog's missing the bow and ham.
Hey, Baffinet, oh, Baffinet, hey, Baffinet, you're the one for me.
Behind the bars,
hey, Baffinet, oh, Baffinet, hey, Baffinet, you're the one for me.
Ned put on her Sunday dress, thought that it wouldn't look the best, made out of an old piece I thought he wrote right on the back,
hey, Baffinet, oh, Baffinet.
Baffinet, you're the one for me. Nelly's got a pair of shoes and she can wear them if she'll choose. So why the heck she got the blues and wants to wear a size 22?
Hey, Baffinet, oh, Baffinet, hey, Baffinet, you're the one for me.
Thank you.
fighting side of me. I sign off tonight as always, do with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on Alt-Right TV and WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, hoping to get a couple of bars for this one. Sometimes it's just not our night technologically. There we go.
In days of yore from Britain shore, would the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.